We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
The tournament is about moments or embracing a moment. Some teams can get it. Some teams never get it. Some teams get it for one game. Sometimes you get it for multiple games.
In transition, it's a two-on-one. The lob to Dawkins, who lost it on the way up. Big break for Duke. Now Reddish the other way. 1:48 to go. Still down by four. Top of the key for three.
I was ready to shoot. I was trying to get my shot up. I mean, I was ready to let it go. All I needed was an open look. I knew I was going down as soon as I saw.
20 seconds to go. Got to go quickly. It's Zion. 17 seconds. Drives inside. Spins in on Taco Fall. Count it! And a chance for three!
I consider him the greatest coach of all time. When he looks at you and tell you that you're made for this moment, it's like the most confidence you can be given. So when I went to the basket, I knew it was going in.
Can he bring Duke even?
I was just thinking, what can we do to win this game? And I remember watching March Madness and watching a whole bunch of games and seeing, you know, miss free throw, somebody gets a rebound and a put back. So I thought, I'm just going to try to do whatever I can to get this rebound.
On the way, short, the rebound to Barrett. Put it up and in to give Duke the lead. 11 seconds to go. Duke by one and a timeout for UCF. 77-76. Allen to inbound. Delorier to contest on the left sideline. Waiting. Gets it in for Taylor. Jones has him at midcourt. 6-5. Drives in on Jones to the bucket. Put it off the window. No. Tap follow. No. Zion the rebound. And the Blue Devils survive.
It was tough, even when we won. The mixed emotions, you don't know how you're going to feel until that happened. And it's not only that, it's the way it happened. And it happened for us in a win and for them in a loss. And it produced like a thing I've never felt before. And I've had a chance to interact with Johnny, his family, then, the next day, and whatever. Because a very special moment in sport, I think, the way it all went down.
And welcome in. It's the Duke Basketball Podcast as the Blue Devils are on to the Sweet 16 for the 27th time in program history and the 25th time for Mike Krzyzewski in 35 trips to the NCAA tournament. Pretty remarkable stuff. I'm David Shumate, joined alongside by Associate Head Coach John Shire. And Coach, we just listened back to some of the key moments from Sunday. We couldn't really play back the entire full game, but that it was one of those games that you could watch it over and over again, listen to it over and over again. A special game in so many different ways.
Well, first of all, it was the best environment I've ever been in for a round of 32 game. It felt like a
Elite Eight game or a Final Four environment. It really did. I mean, even the jump ball, you know, the whole arena is standing and on their feet. And it just had that feel right from the get-go that it was going to be a big-time game. They showed, UCF did right away, I mean, with Dawkins, what he was doing with Fall, that it was going to be a high-level game and we had to step it up. I think right from the get-go, our guys felt that.
I want to talk about the ins and outs of the late-game situation here in just a second, but on Sunday, it felt so much like, you know, the guys the last few weeks through initiative with Nike have been wearing these warm-up shirts that say family, and it felt like that was the overarching theme really through the entirety of Sunday afternoon, and you could see everyone was just emotionally drained at the end.
We were. It was a long 2 hours, but also a long 2 days when you prepare to play any opponent, but also knowing all of us how close we are to Coach Dawkins and his family and what he's meant to our program. I think all of us would say this as assistants now on the staff, whether it be Chris, Nate, Nolan, myself. There would be no us without Johnny. That's just the reality of, you know, who he is and what he's meant to this program. By far the most important player to ever come to Duke, because he started it all, along with his class and those guys that came with him. But he was the first guy to do it, and he did it at a really high level. And just for me, you know, my experience playing for Coach Dawkins for 2 years here at Duke, I learned a ton from him. He's a guy who stands for all the right things. I think you saw his, you know, post-game speech afterwards to his team. That's who he was when he was here, and all those things. You know, he made you want to run through a wall for him when he was here. And it was interesting for me just to see it come full circle now. He's been a head coach twice at Stanford, now here. And he coached an incredible game against us. He had his guys ready. They had a great game plan. You hate to see him lose, but obviously we're not sorry. We're going ahead. We're excited about it. And, you know, we're going to Sweet 16.
Just one more thought on that. Obviously, Nolan Smith is very close to him because of losing his father young. And Mike Krzyzewski's talked pretty openly about Johnny Dawkins was pretty much a father figure to Nolan. But Johnny Dawkins' son as well, Aubrey Dawkins, grew up around this program. When you played here, he was, you know, they said he was a gym rat. He was always in here getting shots up. His dad was working with him. I know in the game you're focused on how to slow him down, but I imagine it was one of those rare film sessions after the fact that you guys were, I would think, maybe smiling a little bit at what this kid has become.
Well, not quite smiling. Yeah, but it was amazing to see who Aubrey has become, no question about it. And, you know, it's one of those nights. It was just a special night that he was having, and you hate to see it against us. Obviously, you're not rooting for him at all during the game. You're yelling any way possible just to stop him and defend him. And, you know, it got to a certain point where he was in tough shots. Some of those it's hard to do anything about. But it's funny, you know, he was young when I was in college still. And if I can do the math well, let's see, he was about 10, 12 years old when I was here. And all of a sudden, I remember I came back my first year on staff, and there's this guy in the training room, and it was Aubrey. And all of a sudden, he had just sprouted up. He looked mature and old, and I couldn't believe how he developed, and obviously he's turned into a heck of a player.
And obviously it turned into a win for Duke, 77-76 over UCF. Let's talk about how the game played out a little bit. You walk out, and there's one man on the floor that had won 32 jump balls the entirety of the season, and he's got about a foot on everybody on the floor. I'm talking about Taco Fall. It's 7'6", 3'10". If it's possible to have a guy end up in a game with, what, some 6 rebounds and 15 points and feel like Duke did a really nice job of containing him.
Look, he's not just tall. He's really good, and he knows how to use his body. And, you know, we've played some tall guys this year, you know, guys that are over 7 feet and try to protect the rim, but no one does close to as good of a job as he does. As big as he is on tape, you see him in person, and it's another level. First of all, I thought Zion could have gotten the jump ball. I thought it was a tough toss to get. That's the first
That's
thing.
A good point.
But second, we did a good job. You know, Javon really battled him inside, and at times Zion was on him, and, you know, he's given up about a foot, and we did a good job with that. He's going to get some dunks. We talked about before the game, you try to limit those. But for the most part, we stayed in between him and the basket and did a good job on him.
Getting into the coaching room a little bit, is that, there's, I imagine there's certain matchups you want to front the guy in the post, another guy you want to play behind. How do you guys go in trying to figure that out, and what did you decide on was going to work best against him?
Well, we always talk about not allowing guys to catch and playing post defense, and, you know, whether we play, we call it three quarters, where you're on the top side but not fully fronting. But with any good post player, you try to front. With him, you can't do that because as soon as you front, they're just going to throw right over to him, and it's an automatic dunk, and we've seen that happen many times throughout the season. And so our thing was just to fight for post position. But you can't get on the top side because you're in trouble if that happens.
Yeah, I don't think you get the newspaper underneath his foot when he dunks. I'd love to have that problem in life, though.
I wish I had that problem.
It's incredible to see. But as you said, I thought Javon Deloria did a nice job of battling. And we'll talk about Zion Williamson in a couple different areas here in just a second. But just big picture, because he did get a shot blocked a couple of different times. And I think, you know, a lesser player, maybe someone with not quite the ticker that he has, might shy away from that and start looking for jump shots. I was blown away, not surprised, but impressed with how Zion, and it obviously paid off at the very end, just kept attacking over and over again at the basket, even though he was dealing with Taco Fall.
Yeah, no, the last play to get that three-point play, you know, obviously we missed the free throw, but we end up scoring, was an example of that. You know, he spun off a defender, and then he goes through the contact, and not many guys have been able to do that with Fall. So that was, look, not surprised by it, though. Zion's an attacker. He knows what he's capable of. I don't care anybody in the country. He can finish through that contact.
Well, let's talk about the end of game sequence. It was a back-and-forth affair. Duke had an 8-point lead at halftime, and the two teams started trading off 7-0 runs out of locker room. UCF had one to get within one. Duke had one to stretch it back to 8, and then UCF answered again to get it down to 1. About 12, 13 minutes to go in the game, and then it was just kind of on. It was a back-and-forth game, and then Coach called it a haymaker, a flurry. Deion Griffin, who's not a great three-point shooter, puts one in. B.J. Taylor, who is, puts one in, and all of a sudden UCF has, what, a 4-point lead in the late going, and I want to start the conversation there. It was 74-70, and UCF certainly missed an opportunity with the dunk in transition, but Duke took advantage, and Cam Reddish hits a three, and this is a guy I know that you've known for a long time, that you recruited, and we've talked about how you called him after one of the national championships and said, I want you to be a part of this. You know, we were talking a second ago about Aubrey Dawkins and the growth process there. You've seen Cam Reddish grow up. What was that moment like for you? He's had a bunch of those this year, but maybe none bigger.
Well, look, Cam has had a terrific year. What he's done as of late in some of the biggest games we've had, he's had the biggest shots the entire season. This was just another example. You know, obviously, they didn't finish on that breakaway. And so instead of being a six-point game, Cam comes down. The great thing about it, you know, I think the tendency is to go fast and to go quickly. And Cam showed great poise in that play. If you watch it, where he slows up and he waits for Javon to come screen him. And then obviously he comes off and he just sticks it. And it's nothing but net. And so he has a way about him. End of games, tight situations, the score's close. He's calm, and he's, again, Florida State, Louisville, last game. I could go on and on, other games as well. But his poise is just terrific in those situations, and it was the biggest shot of the game because that three, all of a sudden it's a one-point game, and you can put a little game pressure on him again. Really proud of him and what he did, and obviously going to look for him to do more of that this weekend.
The two teams exchange some misses, and then UCF gets some free throws, and they take a three-point lead. And the Blue Devils come down, and everyone knows the drive for Zion Williamson, the and-one finish that fouled out Taco Fall. And then the offensive rebound for R.J. Barrett and the ultimate putback to give Duke the lead, followed up by really a sterling defensive possession, I thought, for
Trey. Can I say one thing about that? Here's the cool part. We usually have our walkthroughs. You have a day in between a game, and you walk through offense and defense. Very rarely do you walk through free throw blockouts. And Coach thought it would be a huge key to the game on our shot and on their shooting, free throw blockouts. And we literally walked through it. And you're probably thinking, like, what can you walk through for a free throw blockout? But we did. We executed that exactly how Coach wanted us to. So on the free throw blockout, RJ gets a rebound. But if you watch, Javon got in there. And that's part of the reason RJ was able to get it. And so it's just funny how things work out like that. And, you know, it comes down to a free throw blockout and us getting in there and making a big-time play. But it was something we walked through the day before.
And RJ had the presence of mind. As he said after the game, he actually flashed back to when he was a kid and taking in the tournament and thinking about offensive rebound opportunities late in games and how many times he'd saw that be critical. I mean, for a kid to have that sort of presence of mind at that moment. But the reason I wanted to bring in the Trey Jones defensive stop is because I feel like at different points this year, those guys have stood out individually. Whether it be, you know, Zion Williamson was obviously unbelievable in the ACC tournament. RJ Barrett with a triple-double against NC State. We talked about the Reddish game winners. You know, you think about Trey Jones against Texas Tech in the defense, but in a 2-minute stretch for all of them to do something to get Duke over the finish line and into the Sweet 16, to me, that was pretty special. It wasn't any individual guy. It was a team.
It was. And Javon's offensive rebound to give us the extra possession. And, you know, Trey's defense on the last play again, the tendency when a guy gets to a spot, Taylor, you know, they set up a good play. It opened up his right hand. The tendency is to want to try to block a shot. He did a great job of putting his hand straight in the air where he didn't. I'm actually doing it right now, and you're like, nobody can see you. I know you.
I just haven't seen your hands up before on the pickup court, so I didn't know.
I'm usually my hands are here calling
ready
for
the to
ball.
Shoot.
Yeah. But he did a great job not fouling. And, you know, again, we actually watch that play, so we all get in there for the rebound on defense, and it's a great learning opportunity. You know, we're fortunate that didn't roll in. But again, we put ourselves, I think the important thing is we put ourselves in a position to win, as did they. In a game like that, it comes down to one or two plays. We made one more play than they did.
And you're obviously talking about the Aubrey Dawkins tip-in at the end that crept out. I saw a crazy stat over the last, I think, 6 years or so leading into this March. Duke had played a total of like 3 1-point games. But since, you know, early March, that game against Wake Forest, 3 games decided by a point, 2 of them were basketball crept out. And I don't know about you, I couldn't help but think, even in the moment where the Dawkins basket was hanging on the rim, flashback to Grayson Allen last year against Kansas and how, you know, it wouldn't go to give Duke a win to go to the Final Four. And this time, everyone wearing Duke blue was thrilled that it wouldn't go.
It's nice to go this way sometimes. And again, sometimes you get a little fortunate, sometimes you don't. That's the beauty. That's the hard part about this game. That's why one locker room was crying, the other locker room is celebrating. And, you know, I think that's what everyone loves about March Madness. But I think the thing, as far as it relates to us, we have some things to learn from that. And a lot of times, teams, you don't do some things the way you would have wanted to, and you get sent home. And so for us, you know, we have a lot of lessons to take from it. We've talked about it yesterday in practice, and I think we can now apply it to the game on Friday and moving forward, hopefully.
I love that, because we're going to pivot to Virginia Tech.
I knew that. I was trying to set you up for that.
We're getting that chemistry going. Yeah, no good. We'll talk about the Hokies in depth here in just a second. Not shocking, I would think, that Duke is bumping into an ACC opponent as good as the league has been this year as Duke gets deep into the NCAA tournament. But you're kind of talking a little bit about the pivot, and I know Coach has spoken a lot about you can't be a prisoner of the moment. You have to move forward. You have to constantly be looking forward. He says he doesn't have a rearview mirror. But when you have a game that is what it was on Sunday, an amazing comeback, an amazing win, but emotionally draining, what is that process like? How much do you give the guys, you know, time to just get their minds clear to move forward? When do you guys start that process of, okay, it's on to Virginia Tech?
We give them one day.
Yeah.
One day. Let's enjoy it. Let's get our rest. And now we're back at it. And so, you know, we know how good Virginia Tech is. We know it's going to be a battle. And also, our goal wasn't to make it to a Sweet 16 in this tournament. So I think now there's a little, I don't want to say pressure, but once you get the first two under your belt, it's different playing in the tournament. I don't know how to explain it other than it's a different level of intensity. And when you feel like it's the end, it brings out a different side of your opponent, out of you. And we felt that this past weekend. So I think for our guys, now we know what it's going to be like playing the tournament. Now we can lock into focus. So really, it's a day. We short, get our rest, and now it's all about Virginia Tech and nothing else.
And you said, and you don't want to take anything away from UCF. They played an incredible game, a one-point win for Duke. You said there are things that Duke needs to do better. What were some of those things that stood out to you?
Yeah, well, the way we're starting games right now is, you know, the last two games has not been what it needs to be. I think that's no secret. And so we need to come out on Friday night at 9:39, which really will be about 10, guns blazing. You know, we need to come out ready to go right from the start. And I thought the last two games, we've been knocked back a little bit, which it happened. To our credit, we closed first halves very well. And we went into both these last games with a lead at halftime, even not playing our best in that first half. We need to start off better. That's a big key.
It feels like, from my perspective, anyway, watching the youth of this team, they're so talented, but to me, they're so smart. Definitely agree with you on the sentiment of wanting to start faster, but it is fascinating to watch. I've seen it time and again this year. The uniqueness of Taco Fall and the challenge that goes with that. You can see them learning as the game moves along and figuring things out. It's almost like it's a jigsaw puzzle that they're putting things together, and then when it clicks, it's unbelievable the level they can go to. But it is one of the things, just as a side note for me, you can see how smart this team is when they find a new challenge or something they haven't seen before because they are so young, how they can work their way through it in the midst of a game. It's really incredible to me.
I think to me, tell me if I'm explaining this the wrong way, but I think they have a pulse of how the game is going, or they have a feel for it, and that's something that's hard to teach, but these guys have that. And so, like, what I'm saying is they get in a game and, you know, UCF is coming out ready to go. They feel that, and they're able to rise to that occasion, or to know we need to rebound more, to know we need to drive the ball more here. That they have a very good feel for the game. All these guys do. And so that's something that's really special about this team. We don't want to forget that or lose that, but we can also have that and start games off well.
And keep the coaches from having a heart attack. That every
would be
game
nice.
Has
exactly.
to be a one-point game. But, yeah, and Coach Krzyzewski's talked a lot about the will to win. I think that feeds into that pulse and that basketball knowledge that you're talking about. Well, it is Virginia Tech, but it in some ways it feels like a brand new matchup. These two teams met in the regular season. Of course, Virginia Tech won in Blacksburg 77-72, but both teams were missing a big piece. Justin Robinson, a tremendous guard for Virginia Tech, has been dealing with a foot injury for a long time, going back to January, just returned last weekend in the NCAA tournament for them as they got to the Sweet 16 with the win over Liberty on Sunday. Duke, of course, had to play that game without Zion Williamson, and for those that do remember, it was also the second of two consecutive road games after another emotionally draining game at Syracuse and a big win on the road. How much can you draw from that game? Obviously, you can see some schematics of what the two teams like to run, but without those two big pieces on the floor, it's a rematch, but it feels like a very different game.
It is a different game. You know, look, they're still who they are. Robinson gives them another dimension they didn't have otherwise. Obviously, with us, Zion does the same thing. But, you know, we're different. And so we're going to look at it. We're going to talk about some things we need to do better. We were right there then. It's a tie game, and they hit a three to go ahead with under a minute left. And, you know, again, it comes down to one or two plays. But we know how good they are. We know they play very good defense. They swarm the ball. Blackshear's been one of the best big guys in the country all year. And now you had Robinson, who going into the year is one of the best point guards in the country. So we know what's at stake and who they are, but we're still putting together our game plan, and we'll make sure we're ready to go.
In the NCAA tournament, so often it's the unknown. You're preparing for someone you haven't seen before, maybe ever, but more often than not, a non-conference opponent. Second consecutive year that you guys are going to face a conference opponent in the Sweet 16. How does that change the dynamic in terms of what goes into winning these games?
Well, usually during this time, you're really getting to know a team well, where you know, we played Sunday night, but that Monday you're finding more info about who guys are, who the team is, and we already know who Virginia Tech is, as do they. They know who we are, and I think so now it's, you know, they know us very well, so we know they know us very well, and so we need to make sure the things we can do well, we do at a high level, and other things that are our weaker points, we address and figure out how to make sure we can combat that.
As the Blue Devils look to get to the Elite Eight for the 22nd time, and of course the second consecutive season after going there last year in the Midwest region. And it's going to be played in Washington, D.C. And you know, with Duke, obviously think of Durham. A lot of people think of New York City and connections to Madison Square Garden. But the DMV has deep ties to this program, and saw one of them this weekend. Johnny Dawkins, coach talked about Tommy Amaker. Of course, Nolan. So, I mean, you can go
who?
On and on.
Nolan who?
Yeah, exactly. You go on and on the list. I mean, there's a lot of connections in this area. There's going to be a lot of family in the building on Friday night.
Yeah, there is. I mean, D.C.'s always been special to us. It's not fun to play with guys from D.C. all the time. They don't pass you the ball in the right situations necessarily. No, I'm just kidding. You know, but it's going to, like, wherever we're playing, we're happy we're playing. And if it's in D.C., obviously that's great by us. And it'll be, I'm sure it'll be loud and crazy in there.
How deep is that passing? Is that like a yesterday thing, or is that like a way,
no,
way
you
back?
You know, it's just this one play I give him a hard time about on my senior night, my last time ever in Cameron. And he had me open on the right wing, and he decided to shoot it. My last play ever in Cameron. You know, I got subbed out right after. I thought, you know, he was going to hit me. He didn't. He got to play a hole next year. And so I'll make sure he hears about it from time to time.
And you still have the guy in your wedding.
You know what? We need to bring him on after the season.
To talk about that?
And I want to talk about this.
I think we need to bring a therapist, too.
Yeah, that too would be good. I forgot about it. It was 9 years ago in 3 weeks, you know, but anyway, we still have an amazing record playing together.
I feel like every part of the country has a different personality in terms of basketball. Obviously, you've been on the recruiting trail for a while now. What would you say about that particular part of the country, why it has generated so many great players?
You know, I think, again, we should bring Nolan back on to talk about it, because I'm biased, but I think Chicago has produced as many great players as anywhere. But, well, I think just the history of, you know, Washington once you start producing great players, I think it becomes where the next guys want to do the same thing, and that's what's happening in that city. And you look not only that city, but they're pulling from different places too. When you can pull from Virginia and Maryland, and you know, all over the both states, it's a great tradition, similar to Chicago.
Always comes back home, right? No, that's fair. And it should be an electric atmosphere on Friday night. Obviously, Virginia Tech is nearby, just down the road in Blacksburg, and Durham is not too far away, just a couple hours down the road. Real quick, before we jump into our three-point shot and get out of here, you talked a little bit about Virginia Tech. Just a quick peek at what you've seen so far in studying them.
Well, they're a much better team with Robinson, and they were already a top 15 team throughout the whole year without him. So they're a great team. You know, they really can shoot the ball, so they put a lot of pressure on your defense with their three-point shooting ability. They have multiple playmakers, and Alexander Walker and Robinson, and Blackshear is a playmaker for them. And they have shooters spaced around them. So it's a team that's very together. They're very confident in who they are and what they do, and they play a tough defense. And so, you know, it's going to be a heck of a game. We need to do a good job with their shooting and control their best player.
Yeah, and here in the tournament, they do have four guys averaging in double figures. Robinson hasn't been inserted yet into the starting lineup, but he is playing good minutes, 29 minutes a game for them. And as you said, Blackshear just keeps on delivering. He's their leading scorer, 17 points a game, also with six rebounds. And they are so efficient from three. They're 11 of 26 in the tournament from three, 42%. They've made three fewer threes from their opponents and 28 fewer attempts. They've taken less than half the attempts from three as their opponents, shooting 42% from the perimeter while only giving up 26%. And in some ways, that's really kind of how Buzz Williams likes to play basketball.
Yeah, well, it's tough because they're not like they're not only shooting threes. And because of their ability to shoot threes, it opens up driving lanes and they can get to the rim as well. And Blackshear gets them easy ones, posting up. So, you know, it's a game where you need to control the ball. You need to keep them out of our paint because when they do penetrate, that's the way they get their threes.
And let's jump into the three-point shot before we get out of here. Duke and Virginia Tech, the Sweet 16 game again, will be Friday night, a little after 9:30. It'll be the second game of the session in Washington, D.C. LSU and Michigan State will be the first game. Just a side note, for the tournament as a whole, 14 of the top 16 seeds have advanced to the Sweet 16. Just the second time that's happened, kind of an odd scenario. 2009 was the other time, and it's the exact same seed line as a 5 and a 12 have gone through as well. It's kind of weird how history matches up that way, but it speaks to how good the top half of the bracket has been and how good the teams are going to be the rest of the way, and all four top seeds are still alive in Duke's region. Michigan State is the 2 seed, and LSU is the 3 seed. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the three-point shot, and we talked a lot about the UCF game and the emotional roller coaster that was. In some ways, you're a mentor. In some ways, you're a coach for these young guys. How do you help them manage that?
Well, really, you can talk to them as much as you want, but I think the best thing is for them to experience it. Letting them know we've been through different situations, I think that helps to hear it. But I honestly think the best medicine is for them to feel it, see it themselves. And this past weekend, they were obviously able to do that.
And they are so talented and so gifted, and they were certainly a favorite on Sunday afternoon. And as you said, knocked back by UCF, and UCF played extremely well, and Duke was able to get the win. Is that a lesson that can only be learned on the court? I mean, we know that Duke is going to get everybody's best shot when they go on the floor. But these guys, I mean, they found a way to win. But the amount of effort and the energy you see from the opposition all year long, but particularly in the NCAA tournament, I watch UCF on film. You watch UCF on film. I don't know about your opinion. But to me, that was the best UCF played all year. Shouldn't be surprising, but at the same time, it was maybe, or maybe taken a little bit back for the guys on the floor.
Well, I think that's the point, because you don't understand that you're going to get someone's absolute best in the tournament. And that's what happened. And that's where we can talk all we want. We can tell them about when I was a freshman, I lost to VCU by a buzzer beater my first game. The second year, got upset by West Virginia in the second round. We were a 2 seed. Third round, lost in the Sweet 16, and you know, won the whole thing my senior year. You can talk about all those experiences, but until you're in the moment and you feel the level that the other team is at, because it's their last time ever playing together, if they lose, it's something you have to go through. And so I'm happy with this team. We went through it. They were at their highest level they could be at. We found a way to win. That says a lot about this team.
And it's interesting because, you know, with the era of the one and done and guys going pro early, you have a bunch of freshmen potentially who kind of have that same sentiment of this is our maybe last go-round together, at least for some of them. And you can kind of see that emotion and the effect that has
Definitely.
On them as the game moves along. Well, let's move on to our second topic. We talked a lot about the DMV, a lot to choose from here, and I hope you're going to make somebody mad. Who's your favorite player that has previously worn a Duke uniform from the DMV?
Well, I have two guys I'm very close with from the DMV. It's a hard decision, but it's easily between Grant Hill and Quinn Cook. Like, I'm just, you know, I can't decide. Two great guys, great personalities, and I can't decide between
the two.
That pass
really hurt.
I mean, can't decide between the two.
Not a third, though.
Yeah,
it's a distant gap.
There's a big gap, you know, and then I would say probably Tommy Amaker.
Wow.
You know, and then there's another, you know, Johnny Dawkins, and then there's a big gap, and I think Nolan would get into the top five. He would be in the top five for sure. So
you got to pick.
It would be Nolan. He's my guy, my backcourt mate, always champions together. There's nobody else I'm choosing than him.
One other thing I want to touch on before we go was that the guys had some unique kicks that they were wearing over the weekend down in Columbia, South Carolina. They had very specific shoes on to each of them. Trey Jones had a pink ribbon on in honor of his mom, Debbie Jones, who they announced he and Tyus did on Instagram that they've caught it early, but she's battling with cancer. And I know you're incredibly close with that family and what they're going through and really a special group of people.
Well, obviously, the Jones family are very special people. What Debbie's going through is not easy. And she's been in our thoughts, been on our minds, you know, since we heard the news. And, you know, it hasn't been easy for Trey, and he's going through it. And I think now it being public has helped him. And, you know, his mom was at the game with his aunt and uncle, and it's great to see him there. She's doing great. She's, you know, as tough as anybody. And so, you know, the best we can do is be tough on our end, keep battling, keep winning games, and keep this thing going. But obviously, the Jones family, special place for them in our hearts with Tyus and Trey being here. And, you know, Debbie Jones is as good as it gets.
And when you look at her kids, that tells you a little bit about the lady that presented them. And as you said, our thoughts are with them, and she's certainly going to attack this thing. And, again, they caught it early, so that's a good thing. And our thoughts are certainly with them. And on the lighter side of things, the other guys had a couple of different shoes. Cam Reddish had a different one. Zion Williamson said takeoff imminent. It was cool they all had those different special moments, which made me think if, you know, we flash back, we won't say how long, but and John Shire could have some custom kicks out there for an NCAA tournament game, what would you have along?
I think I would just put sky as the limit. Because for my game, that's where, you know, it fits just with how high I could jump. I think sky is the limit. I like right on the side. On the other side, I would say, I love you, Mom, because special shout out to my mother. And then on the other shoe, I would have can't guard me. And then I would have on the other side of the other shoe, I would say, I'm the man. So those would be all the same. I hope you don't think I'm serious right now.
No, it's like you got all the humility on like one of the four.
Exactly.
And it balances out everything else. I love you,
exactly.
Mom.
Yeah,
now
but,
back to
you know,
me.
I just never, it never occurred to me, you know, again, we're not going to say how long I played, but I could have a hashtag, like a slogan for myself. And, you know, Cam Fam, I'm jealous of Cam that he has Cam Fam. I told him we need to figure out something for me. And, you know, he was thinking, what was he thinking? He had a couple ideas. We need to get him on here and help me figure out something.
Yeah, we should definitely join him. Brennan Besser is actually talking to him intermediate day between the two games and the press conferences. And he said we should combine Cam Fam and, you know, B53, we could call it Mega Fam. And Reddish is in the background. I don't know if he's quite on board with that. But Brennan's a creative guy. Maybe he could help you with
Brennan could help too. But, yeah, I don't know. We need both of them maybe.
Yeah,
you need both guys.
We should get them on down the road. But the Blue Devils now are focused on the task at hand, and that is Virginia Tech on Friday night. Again, a late tip should be fairly comfortable for this team. They've done that quite a bit this year just after 9:30. Looking forward to the Sweet 16. Coach, appreciate it.
Thank you as always.
Talk to you guys next week.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.